Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining us live worldwide on Close Up Radio. Jim Masters here, and so is Dr. Prince Singh. He's a highly sought-after kidney disease specialist and founder of Kidney Solutions Pro, LLC. And Dr. Singh is trained in general nephrology, the Mayo Clinic, as well, and transplant nephrology, Duke University, with a background training in internal medicine. As a nephrologist, Dr. Singh can diagnose and treat kidney disease and help his patients along the way. Kidneys, of course, an organ that's vital, primarily responsible for cleaning your body and clearing out blood by filtering out unwanted and excess substances. Kidney disease is defined as a kidney condition that can interfere with the function of the kidney. It ranges from chronic kidney disease to kidney stones and polycystic kidney disease, urinary tract infections, and more. And according to Dr. Singh, diabetes and high blood pressure are among the leading causes of kidney disease, among other causes such as kidney stones, chronic use of painkillers, and autoimmune diseases. Dr. Singh urges us to take proactive steps to protect our kidneys. Some important tips include drinking plenty of water, avoiding chronic use of the NSAIDs. They are Aleve, ibuprofen, Advil, controlling your diabetes and high blood pressure, among other things. If kidney disease gets worse over time, your kidneys may stop working completely, and at that point, dialysis will be required to perform the function of the kidneys. And dialysis cannot cure kidney disease. It can prolong your life. In some cases, a kidney transplant may actually be recommended. Hope is on the horizon for treating chronic kidney disease as new drugs emerge where people may be able to really delay dialysis or kidney transplants. Coming to us from Rintown, Minnesota, it's very wonderful to have Dr. Prince Singh join us here on the show for part one of our exclusive two-part series on Close Up Radio. Dr. Singh, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. I'm very excited about this time. Yeah.
Oh, I'm very excited to have you here with us as well. It's an honor and a privilege. For those who are listening who are not sure the work of a nephrologist, can you tell us about the work that you do and what a nephrologist actually does?
Yeah. So a nephrologist is someone who studies kidneys. And when we say studies kidneys, it means studying kidney disorders more than normal working kidneys. But it's true, you have to know how the normal work before you can study the abnormal part. So basically, we are physicians who specialize or who are working in the area of people who suffer and are about to be suffering from kidney problems, most of the time, which happens because of something other than the kidney, like diabetes or high blood pressure or other things, as we just heard. So that's pretty much the work of a nephrologist.
It's such important work as well. Tell us about your background and maybe some of the things in your own life's journey that pointed you in the direction of wanting to do this kind of work and becoming such a noted kidney disease specialist.
Thank you. So I was trained in medicine. I always, growing up, as I become more kind of adult, I was thinking of choosing a path or choosing a profession where I would be able to, as much as able to make a good living, but also be able to help people. And I think medicine came out obvious as one of those areas where you can do well in your life and also help other people live well. So that's how I geared towards medicine, and since I was someone who liked thinking more than basically working with my hands, so I thought that something along the lines of diagnosis, trying to find what's wrong, would be something very enjoyable to me, and that led me to the path of internal medicine, which is basically a very broad field where you treat people who suffer from all sorts of internal diseases. By internal, I mean things of liver, kidneys, heart, all such things. So once I did that, I realized, okay, it's a very, very broad field, and if I really want to be a master over a small area, I need to focus on one organ, and that led me to nephrology. The reason I geared towards nephrology was the, I would say, significant amount of thinking involved in this field in order to diagnose. We see some of the sickest patients, and in some ways it's very satisfying to be able to help people who are basically at the, in some ways, end of their organ function, especially when they have cancer or uncontrolled diabetes for many years. So, and I also like talking with people and helping patients, so nephrology gives me that area where I can follow patients over their decade or two of their life and actually help them live better with their existing conditions. So that's my journey, why I get towards nephrology, and I still enjoy it very much.
Yes, which is great. It's something that if you enjoy it, your patients will certainly see that. Kidney disease, I hear, is actually on the rise. Why is that? Or is it obesity, the diabetes, the high blood pressure? Are we experiencing more of that in our society? What's causing the rise in kidney disease?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. I think it's not unfair to say that we are seeing an epidemic of kidney conditions, just as we are seeing an epidemic of heart conditions as well. And I think there are multiple factors that are leading in that direction, but principal reasons we just heard, but I think it's lifestyle. I think as more and more of industrial advancement has taken place, people are working less. They are basically, you know, for good reason, sitting and working and having probably more comfortable lifestyle than what we used to have, let's say 100 or 200 years ago. And that is creating a metabolic, kind of new metabolic setup for the body, where less work, less physical exertion is kind of not necessarily helping the internal organs much more for the blood vessels inside the body. So even if we are not doing anything, we are in some ways, by being sedentary or not so active, laying a good ground for things to probably go south if we get older. So that's one condition. The other would be, we are a rich, affluent society, and we have abundance of everything, including food, which is good, and that's the problem we have in third world nations, that they don't have enough food there. But the problem here is, again, you know, since we are, we have so much available to us to enjoy, it is leading to a condition of obesity, which in itself is a risk factor for many other diseases, including kidney diseases. But the third answer, which I'm going to give, is probably, I think, more important in the sense of drilling down why now we are seeing more kidney problems, especially in advanced nations like us. And it's probably because we are living longer now. Like, we are saving people who previously would die of conditions such as cancer and heart diseases. But now, because of development with newer cancer medications, newer cancer treatment, newer cardiac interventions, where previously we were not able to save these people, now we are able to do heroic intervention and save these people out of basically death. But then they are going to live longer, and they are going to live with the residual effect of those conditions, which landed them in the problem in the first place. So we are seeing increasing bulk of people who are in their 70s, 80s, and even 90s who had cancer treatment 10 years ago and are now developing kidney problems, not so much because of kidney, but because the treatment they had received 10 years ago did some injury to the kidney, which is now manifesting as they're aging. So I think because of aging population, we are seeing more and more of newer kidney problems.
So what are some of the things from your perspective that distinguish you from other kidney specialists that are out there, and just in terms of your approach and the way you look at it, the way you treat your patients? What are some of the things that make you stand out, doctor?
Thanks a lot. I think most of my colleagues are very hardworking, smart people. I would say I've benefited a lot, especially from my mentors who have taken great care of patients. I would say what I like the most in some ways is trying to find the cause rather than just treat someone. So if I'm seeing a person who is newly diagnosed with a kidney problem, instead of just talking about treatments such as dialysis or transplantation or medication, I really go back into the history and try to find out, even if it's hard to find in the sense of timing, what went wrong that caused the problem in the first place. And that to me is very satisfying. And the reason I bring it up is because in some of my, you know, my work area, I do notice my colleagues who are more focused on the future, which is great. But I think in order to understand a better future, we have to go back in the past and understand what went wrong so that we can prevent it from happening again. So I see myself doing a little bit differently. And again, there are a lot of people who do like what I do. But at the same time, I do think that's part I find good about, in a way, about myself. And secondly, I have a very good interest in academic medicine. I have a lot of publications, and I keep myself updated with the newer developments so that I can choose for my patients the best that is coming out. And I go to great length in order to do that so that at the end of the day, it's the patient who needs to be benefiting the most, not just my satisfaction that I know more about medicine. So those are the two things which I kind of, on a daily basis, keeps me going when I see patients in and out on a busy clinic day.
What are some examples of kidney disease, doctor?
Yeah. The common examples, I would say, are, as you had mentioned, kidney disease, which occurs because diabetes, which has stayed with us for a long time in someone who has uncontrolled diabetes for a long, long time, they basically damage the architecture of the kidneys, and kidneys eventually doesn't function well. So diabetes is the most common cause. High blood pressure likewise affects the blood vessels of the kidneys, which get kind of stiff and then cause problems. Again, third thing I'm noticing a lot is people using painkillers, medications like Aleve, Motrin, ibuprofen, celecoxib. Once in a while, taking these medications is all good, but if we are taking them generously on a daily basis, probably 2 or 3 tablets a day, that is a setup for developing kidney failure in the long term. These are some of the most common causes, but there are other causes such as kidney stones, which can block your kidneys and can cause, you know, basically kidney failure if the blockage is not resolved in, let's say, 1 or 2 days time period. And again, there are some immune conditions where our bodies start making abnormal proteins against our own organs. And that's another big category where people eventually go on to develop kidney failure, things such as lupus, scleroderma, membranous nephropathy and those kind of conditions where our own immune system is activated and developing antibodies and destroying the kidneys. And last one I would add is life-saving measures which people get, unfortunately and inadvertently, may lead to kidney failure. Things such as you have a heart attack, you go to the ER, and you get an angiogram. And the dye that is given to you when you're getting your angiogram or a stent in the heart, that can cause kidney problems, probably kidney failure in certain instances. And last but not the least, the treatment for cancer. The newer treatments are excellent for treating cancer, but many of them are also causing kidney failure. So I think these are the most common reasons why we are noticing more and more of kidney issues in our community.
How is it diagnosed? How are you able to discover and hopefully discover early for somebody that they do have kidney disease?
Yeah. I think that's where the million-dollar question is in nephrology. How to diagnose earlier? Because many times when kidney problems start, you don't get any symptoms such as pain, which is one reason why people seek care and attention. By the time it is diagnosed, or by the time the patient starts noticing something is not right, it's kind of late. But question about diagnosis rests upon basically detection. And how we do we detect is the challenge lies in the patient himself noticing that their legs and feet are swollen and they couldn't find a reason why that could be the case. Or the patient notices that suddenly their blood pressure, which previously was very well controlled, now is not getting controlled, and then they seek care why that could be the case. So easy answer for diagnosis is once they are brought to the attention of a doctor, their primary care doctor or the nephrologist, you look at the kidneys. And what do you mean by that? You look at the urine because in many ways urine is the mirror of kidneys. So you analyze the urine under a microscope and you look for abnormal cells which should not be normally filtering out or coming out in the urine. If those cells are present there, that's a sign that something is not right with the kidneys. Other thing you look at is how do the kidneys are looking, like the 10,000 feet view. How do the kidneys look on ultrasound? Are they looking shrunken? Are they looking good, healthy, pulpy size? That's another way. And last but not the least way is the most common way is to looking or to check for the blood protein level called creatinine, which most often is the first sign people get sent to us for evaluation, is the rise in the blood protein level called creatinine, because creatinine should not be rising in your blood if your kidneys are functioning and filtering normally. If for some reason your kidneys don't filter normally, the creatinine in the blood will rise, and that's the way you diagnose it. Just to summarize again, creatinine value, looking at the urine, and looking at kidneys on the ultrasound are the three most common ways to be diagnosed. That's the common way, but to clinch a diagnosis, sometimes you have to do a biopsy of the kidney to actually see in real time what's going on within the kidney tissue. And that's to confirm a diagnosis, I would say, but to diagnose it, those three tests are sufficient enough.
Very important for people to realize there's different stages of kidney disease, right? Maybe you can tell us about the various, I think there's four stages. What do the stages actually mean? Which stage is more severe than the other? And can you live comfortably with certain stages? How does that all work with the stages of it?
Yeah, very good. I think there is some confusion about it, it's probably in some ways generated by, you know, public health experts, I would say, including kidney doctors. When we talk about the stages of kidney disease, I think we should be clear that it's not a homogeneous condition, that, you know, people are developing kidney disease from all sorts of different reasons. So first of all, staging itself may not necessarily be applicable for someone developing kidney disease from diabetes versus someone developing kidney disease because they donated one of the kidneys to their brothers. So it has to be taken with context, what I'm trying to say. By no means the staging of kidney disease should be seen like a staging for a cancer, because I think that's what alarms people when they hear that they have stage 3. And I think for rightful reason, they have good reason to think why, you know, suddenly I'm hearing that I have stage 3 kidney disease. Why wasn't I ever conveyed about this before? So the reason for confusion is the staging of kidney disease is based upon the protein level called creatinine and the subsequently a number that is derived from creatinine value and your age and your race. What I'm trying to say is, let's say that you have a creatinine value of 1, which is a normal value, and someone has a creatinine value of 1.5, and both the people are of, let's say, white race, and both of them are of same age. Obviously, the person with the higher creatinine value is supposed to be functioning at a lesser level of kidney function than someone who has a value of 1, because value of 1 is normal and value of 1.5 is abnormal. So based on these creatinine values, you come to a number called GFR, or glomerular filtration rate, which is a more technical way to measure the kidney function, or I would say estimate kidney function, not necessarily measure. So based on that level of estimation, you kind of grade the people in categories of chronic kidney disease. So you have a stage 1, a stage 2, stage 3, stage 4, and 5. Stage 1 is anything that is higher than a 90 of eGFR, and then stage 2, 60 and 90, and anything beneath 60 is 1, 2, and stage 3, 4, and 5. Not to confuse things here, for a general understanding, anything less than 60 in terms of that value of GFR is considered more serious than anything higher than 60. So if you have a GFR of 55 and you want to donate kidney to your family, you won't be allowed because 60 was a cutoff and you failed to reach that cutoff. So basically, a value of 60 and less, you are already in stage 3 and higher by that definition. So among those stages of 3, 4, and 5, obviously you can understand and anyone can think intuitively 4 and 5 are worse than 3. 4 and 5 are basically values of GFR less than 30. And that basically tells us that you are working at basically 30 to 40% of your kidney, normal kidney function. So that's a way to think about, okay, now we are going to think about dialysis or transplantation if your kidney function is already down to 30 GFR or even 20 GFR. By the time people are referred to us, they are mostly at the level of 55, 60, which is a good thing. But by the time we are talking about transplant referral or dialysis initiation, their value is stage 4/5 with the GFR around 15 to 20. That's what I would say. It gets a little bit technical there, but
yeah.
I hope I was able to kind of... Yeah.
But if, quick question, if they have stage 1 or stage 2 and they're above 60, does it mean that eventually over time they're going to wind up going to 3 and 4 anyway, or are there things that they can do if they have stage 1 or stage 2 to prevent them from ever reaching 3 or 4? Meaning, is it inevitable that once you get stage 1 or stage 2, at some point in your life, if you're living long enough, you'll go to 3 or 4?
So I think it's a very, very good question. And I think that's where the debate is, I would say. There are people in the camp who don't believe that stage 1 or 2 should be counted as, necessarily kidney disease, because stage 1 and 2 are basically normal or in the spectrum of normal. Now, you are right. Should those who are in stage 2 today and 20 years from now, is it safe to say or is it prudent to say that they might become stage 3 or 4? Yes, you can say that. And why I'm saying that with confidence? Because I think you have data from larger population studies that show that most people will lose kidney function once they reach the peak, when the peak is our 30, 35 years of age. And after 35, almost everyone is losing their function 1% a year. So even if nothing happens and you live a healthy life, and if you are 95 years of age, you are probably on stage 3 or stage 4 by default, even if you never had any kidney problem. Now, does it mean that you will need dialysis? No. Does it mean that you need transplant? No. But because of that technical classification, you will be likely to fall in stage 3 if you go on to live 70, 80 years of life. And that's what has been happening. As we get more and more referrals for normal people with normal activity who are being referred because they're stage 3 and they are, lo and behold, 80 years of age, what are we going to do? They are healthy people. So yes, the answer is they will eventually shift. Most of them will shift mostly because of aging and loss of normalcy from aging, not because of a disease process. And what they can do is the same thing they can do to prevent kidney problems in situations like all their good things, controlling their blood pressure, keeping themselves hydrated, avoiding those medications which can be hard on the kidneys, and having or maintaining a normal weight. So these things, which are good health reasons for any conditions, are the same thing that can keep them staying away from kidney disease as well.
That's incredible. It's very important for people to know that. And I think it's fascinating. When would somebody require a kidney transplant?
Good question. So kidney transplant is the standard of care, I would say, for someone who has developed the condition of end-stage kidney disease. And not to make things any complicated more, end-stage kidney disease is basically other way of saying stage 5 kidney disease, where you are better served by transplant or dialysis. Now, why I'm saying so? Because stage 5 can also come in two flavors. One flavor where you are able to maintain your life, do things you love without feeling much problem. And the other flavor is where you are miserable, you are not eating well, you are vomiting, you are itching all the time, you are sleepy 18 hours of the day. Those stage 5 need artificial kidney support. That artificial kidney support can come in two forms, A, transplantation, and B, dialysis. Transplantation is certainly preferred over dialysis because the data clearly shows that people who get transplanted tend to do better in terms of not just quality of life, but also their life expectancy and those two things. And those who cannot get transplanted for any number of reasons, we start preparing them for for dialysis. And again, there are different types of dialysis. We can talk about it, but ideally you want everyone to be given an attempt towards getting a live kidney possible as opposed to directly going on dialysis if they're stage 5/end-stage kidney disease.
What are some treatments that are available? Is dialysis a good option?
Dialysis is not the best option, but of the options that we have, and we have only two options, transplantation and dialysis. Dialysis is the 50% option one can choose. But it's a temporary option. It's artificially doing what kidney does, but you do it basically 3 times a week instead of every day of the week, and you do it only 4 hours when you're on the machine instead of your kidney normally working as they do 24 hours a day. So you can understand that, yes, dialysis is 3 times a week, 4 hours per session. So basically you're on the machine doing the work for you for 12 hours in a week, whereas your normal kidneys is working 24 times 7 hours a week. So you can totally see that even with dialysis, we are only providing a small chunk of what your kidneys normally do on a day-to-day basis. So yes, it's a treatment, but not the very best of treatment. And that's why we encourage everyone to be evaluated for transplantation before settling down for dialysis.
The website to connect with our very special guest, Dr. Prince Singh of Kidney Solutions, is www.kidneysolutions.online. That's kidneysolutions.online. And if you're searching for him, also the spelling of his name is P-R-I-N-C-E. S-I-N-G-H is his last name. Dr. Singh, this was really fascinating. This is just part one of our exclusive two-part series. We look forward to welcoming you back for part two, which will be coming up on October 27th at 1 p.m. Eastern. So we encourage folks to tune in for that. Thanks so much for the work that you do and for stopping by Close Up Radio and sharing some of it and sort of breaking it down in layman's terms so we can really understand and maybe make some decisions in our own day-to-day living now that will help maybe stave off or at least deal with certain things in our lives in advance of them becoming things that become overwhelming. Extraordinary work that you're doing, and I hope you enjoy the time with me as much as I absolutely have with you today, Doctor.
Thank you so much. Thank you again for your time, and it was fun talking with you. Thanks for your call, too.
You are very, very welcome. I appreciate it very, very much, and you continue the successful work that you're doing for your very valued patients, and we'll have you back on October 27th. We're looking forward to that. Dr. Prince Singh of Kidney Solutions, and you can go to kidneysolutions.online to learn more about his extraordinary work. He's amazing. This is your host, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time. and inviting you to stay right there. I'll be back in about 30 minutes from now with another extraordinary guest on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, have a great day. Be well, and thanks for listening.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.